Speaking of great music, if you followed the Australian music scene, even at a distance over the last 15 years, you're going to be pretty familiar with our guest today. We've got two people, and only one can make it today, but they've both been involved in great local bands of the of the 21st century. Alistair Wright have worked with Cloud Control and, of course, Vlossom more recently, and guitarist Sam Lockwood has worked, you know, pretty extensively with the Jezebels. So through these bands, they've released amazing albums that have really changed the course of Australian music history. Now, Alistair and Sam have teamed up for a new duo called Goddess 911, and this is like a beguiling indie electronic project that really sees them tackle some pretty big themes on the EP as well, as the concept of utopia and destruction and humanity's innate selfishness. Heavy stuff, but it's a beautiful EP, and it's all captured on this EP. Is actually titled IFIU, or I Fucked It Up, as we can say that here at 2SER. And in a couple of days, they'll be making their live debut across the road at the Phoenix Central Park from here from 2SER. And we're very, very excited to welcome Sam Lockwood to the Tuckstop Studios. G'day, Sam.
Hey, how you going? Thanks for having me.
So stoked to have you here in the studio. Unfortunately, Al was a little bit crooked today. Couldn't even make rehearsals.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
But we appreciate you being able to come down on a bit of a wet Sunday evening here to the Tuck Shop. We had a little chat off air about this and you guys, but I'd love to go back and find out how this all began and when you first met Al and how the two of you sort of decided to collaborate with this project.
Yeah, sort of a long story. Al and I have been pretty close for a while because we actually sort of were at Sydney Uni at the same time when our bands, the Cloud Control and Jezebels, formed.
Mm.
And we also sort of did a lot of stuff together. Like we sort of started touring at the same time and saw each other at festivals. And then we actually sort of both got interest from labels in the UK, and that drove us to move over there for a little while. And they were living there while we were living there. So we sort of shared this sort of this arc, and we became close with all those guys, and they're just, the Cloud Control is absolutely lovely people. And and then we sort of came back to Australia for different reasons, both of us. And then I had a bunch of, I think like for the Jezebels, like my music's probably the most pop. Like that's what I write.
Oh, for the group.
For the group. And stuff, I had all of these like discarded demos that were like, the band was like, not necessarily they didn't like them, but I was like, okay, they're maybe not for the Jezebels, which I understood. But and then I was also just writing that vein and starting to wanting to do some solo music. And I started writing like the idea of doing a solo album and had a few friends come and sing. And then I was like, Al, come and like, would you mind just singing on a song? And he was like, oh, cool. And he listened to it. And basically like we started writing together, and like, it just was really fun and really natural. And then we wrote a really cool song that actually isn't on the EP. It will hopefully be in the next one. But yeah, I found his presence really inspiring in that creative way. Like I love him as a person anyway, but he's just a really special person. And I was just like, oh, we got to write more together. And so, and he'd actually been working with Vlossom, with Nick from Pinyao.
Yeah.
And he was like gleaning from them some really cool production processes with vocals. And
Nick's pretty amazing at that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like Nick and the guys from Pinyao are like literally like world class in the studio. Not only the music they make is amazing, but like they work with, you know, Elton John, and you know, they're up there. And I feel like because our, like that story with Al and Vlossom is really interesting with starting that band as well, but he was sort of doing that at the same time. And I feel like Goddess 911 was almost like a sort of a negative to, not as in negative, but like a sort of
polar opposite
to, yeah, what he was doing with Vlossom. It was the same sort of creative force, but it was softer and maybe a bit more introspective, or I don't know, like, sure. It was interesting. But so we just found a really creative vein, and I think we both maybe had some pent up creative energy, and yeah, it just was really nice. And then Heather as well got involved in the songwriting too from the Jezebels, and it was, I guess the music became not a therapy thing, but it was like we just found that it was really a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, I love the story. I love how you've known each other for a long time, and then it just sort of naturally happened. And that's, I feel like that's some of the best collaborations when it comes together and you end up on the same path.
Exactly. Yeah, we're very lucky. Like I just always feel lucky. Yeah. So, yeah.
So how long did this project kind of take to pull together? When did you actually go into the studio or start writing, and how long did it all take to kind of be finalized in this EP released a short time ago?
Yeah, it was actually really long. So Al and I had started writing together, like I think it was like the start of 2018, I think, even in 2017.
Wow. Mm, and 4 years.
So we we wrote these demos and started workshopping more songs, and then Future Classic became interested, and then that was like looking really good. We signed a deal with Future Classic, which was super exciting.
Wow, before we'd even released anything.
Yeah, yeah, it was like, this is crazy. And then COVID happened. So it was like, it was literally like ready to go. Not ready to go, but we were like, had a lot to do, like mixing and stuff. But it was really, really quite hard. Like, because we were both really stressed out about like committing to the band, like at that point, because the music industry was, you know, really tough. And so we sort of went through some really sort of hard talks, and like Al had Blossom going as well. So it was, you know, and there was starting to be talk about maybe Cloud Control doing more work, and it
There a chance that Goddess 911 might never have
actually
happened?
Yeah, definitely. Well, like actually, I don't know, like we sort of it was just sort of, we had this like, we really were proud of this collection of music, and it was trying to fit that into a life where COVID music industry was really challenging, and we're sort of trying to position our lives to make our lives stable in that context as people in the music industry. So it was kind of tough, but Al's very passionate, and he was very inspirational to sort of keep it going. And we kept on writing and doing stuff online. And then he actually moved to the UK, I think, for a while. I can't remember the timing of that, but, and then what happened is that we got a support with Kelly Lyons in the UK, which was a really big reason to sort of get it together, and it's an impetus to release. And so that was like, that got the ball rolling as well. But like, I mean, behind the scenes, like, you know, we had really great managers, and Future Classic were really awesome. And it was just making sure it was right to release. Yeah.
Cool.
It seems like it just happened, but it was like a 2-year period of like working out how to make it work.
Yeah. Now the ambitions of this project are very cerebral. You're tackling, as we mentioned in the intro, there's some big themes going on in here. And I read that Al was inspired by a book called The Chalice and the Blade in regards to the project, this idea of utopia and perhaps a better world. Can you talk us through the themes that really drove you guys in this project and what you're actually trying to explore?
Yeah, it's hard to speak. Like, we have such a conversational response to these things because we sort of both have our individual opinions and stuff, but we've sort of like, I don't know, basically it's interesting, straight white male making music that's sort of, you know, responding to that position in the world, you know, like, and we were looking at this Rhian Eisler book about her study of historical societies where there was sort of more balance towards a sort of matriarchal sort of structure of society. And, there's just the idea of like maybe some societies were more about partnerships than domination. And at the time we were just sort of really interested in that idea. And then thinking about who we were as people and also like our interest in sort of music that's soft and what you could almost call, you know, what people would critically call effeminate or something like that. And it's like this sort of, yeah, this sort of swirling world of like, yeah, wanting to make music that's soft and lovely for people to relax and enjoy. And like, maybe like, thinking about what does it mean to do that as well, and then you sort of start thinking about other things about society and so we probably overthought it, but it was more just like we actually found it as a good like place to interrogate, I guess, is making really soft pop music and what does that mean, I guess.
It gave me the opportunity to look into that book, The Chalice and the Blade, not one I'd heard of before, but it seems to be some quite deep themes in there, sort of discussing how female values offer an alternative back before we have this deep-rooted patriarchal society we have now, and that we can structure society in a more peaceful, equitable, and sustainable way.
Yeah, exactly.
And that this can be reached without some sort of utopia. It can just be happen, you know?
I really like,
it was, you know, I have not something I'd really looked into, but just reading that and sort of looking into some of the reviews of the book, it was like, wow, you know, like it's interesting that we can translate that into music as well and talk about it and bring up these topics.
And I obviously the book has its many critics and problems as well, but it's more just like that sort of point of departure, I guess. It was interesting, and like Ursula K. Le Guin was another big inspiration, particularly for Al, and we're sort of like looking at those utopian ideas, which is like soft psychedelic pop is sort of tends to look at those worlds anyway, so
yeah
it's you sort of, everyone's trying to envisage a time or a place that's better than now, which back then it was like pretty crappy, but even now it's like, world's even more intense. So
yeah, I mean, maybe we should look into more matriarchs to make things a better place,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Back to the music, and I guess the release of this EP came with a set of remixes as well, and you've got Skeleton in there, DJ Counseling, Kobe C, say maybe Yusu. You obviously have a lot of connections in the music industry, you know, having worked with Skeleton before as well. Like, how does it go when you want to get a remix for something done? Do you just say, here's the stems, have a go? Or do they approach you and go, oh, I heard this little thing you're doing, maybe I can have a remix?
Yeah, Future Classic were really good with that.
Okay.
Like, their finger on the pulse is insane. Their team is like, really, like, you know, they know. It's because they're also like overseas, they operate overseas, like you get these artists that are just sort of cross genre but really at the forefront of sort of electronic music, or not even just that. So it's I mean, we're close to Skeleton, like we know Russell really well, he's a legend, and like but then like Yuzu or Kobe Say, it was like bringing, we sort of had this short list that we contributed to and Future Classic contributed to, and then we started going back and forth and then seeing how it could work. So
I love that idea of releasing an EP but also releasing a remix EP at the same time.
It's great.
Well, we're going to play one of the tracks from the EP right now, and we're going to go for the title track. I fucked it up as a title track, and it contains some really evocative lyrics in there and a pretty explosive chorus, I reckon. Powerful track, and I'm not quite sure if it's a love song or sort of a protest song. Who works on the lyrics of these tracks? They're very poetic, a lot
of them.
We
write them
well.
Together.
Yeah, it's right.
Me, Al, and Heather write them together. So it's sort of like an exquisite corpse where we sort of contribute to it together. And then it's sort of, there's disjointed moments, and we sort of smooth them over with, you know, sentences that might make sense, but generally it's surreal, like it's intentionally, but importantly the female and male voices are really important to have those, because Heather's sort of envisaged to be like, I guess, in a dystopian world, a sort of that impressive godlike voice that's you can't make sense of, that's, it's not necessarily good or bad, it's just really not scary, but like, you know.
I urge anyone to look at the lyrics, because up on Bandcamp for your EP, all the lyrics are there, and just reading through them, like, so poetic, but like, I was, you know, trying to work out what they were meaning, but I shouldn't have been looking into it so deeply.
We spent a lot of time on them, actually. They're very intentional. They come from a experimental place, but then we refine them and like make them into the story we want to tell. Yeah,
and of course we're talking about Heather Shannon here, who is fellow member of the Jezebels.
Yes,
and an amazing musician in her own right. We played her solo piano project here on the Tuck Shop a while back as well. So yeah, awesome to have her voice on this song. So this is I Fuck It Up. We've got Sam Lockwood in the studio right now with us, talking about Goddess 911, and this the title track from their EP, I Fucked It Up. There, the title track from Goddess 911's debut EP. It's officially called IFIU, you know, just to be, you know, I guess.
What? Swearing's bad.
Well, it's okay on here on 2SCR. I mean, I don't know how much the managing director minds if I say I fucked it up, but that's the name of the song. And it's, you know, it's a word. It's not going to hurt anyone's ears. Any kiddies out there, you'll hear this word a lot.
I actually feel like swearing is just so normalized now.
It feels like
if it
most
wasn't
words,
before,
right? Yeah.
I sort of grew up in a household where swearing is really bad, so I still like hear those lyrics. And I'm like, oh, sorry. Sorry, Mum and Dad.
Now, this show at the Phoenix is going to be your debut, and it's such a beautiful space, and it's a space that really seems to appreciate the artists and has a wonderful aesthetic. Have you thought about much about how you're staging the show? How have you prepared for it?
Yeah, we've actually put a fair bit of effort into the show. We're reimagining the songs like to fit the space. We thought about, you know, doing a full like big band, like live drums, and it's quite a intimate space. So we thought to bring it back, and we've just re-envisaged the songs to be slightly more culty and have like heaps of like a sort of fair few singers and some acoustic instruments, and so yeah, it's going to be really intimate, and we've picked some really nice players from around Sydney, and it's pretty exciting actually. We just rehearsed today and it was sounding pretty good, so it sounds like, for me, I was like, oh, this actually sounds part like good, you know, like I was worried about it, that's what I'm saying.
Now, to diverge slightly from Goddess 911, you have some anniversary shows coming up in a few months for Prisoner. To me, that album feels like it came out yesterday. I can vividly remember driving around Lismore with it in my car. You know, is it a bit wild to realize it's been 10 years?
Yeah, totally. We actually were meant to do this tour last year because it was 2021 was the 10 years, so now it's 11, it's even worse. But I don't know. Yeah, it feels like it was a different person back then. I was someone different, and it feels like a revisiting something that is a distant memory. Yeah, for sure. Because it's been a while since the Jezebels have done a sort of, tour in general. So we've got a lot of rehearsals booked, and it's going to be some of the songs on that album we haven't played much at all as well. They've all been played a few times, but that was more around that 10-year period. But some of them, you know, with live music, you sort of, there's some songs on an album that you don't actually get to play much.
Of course.
So it's exciting. So it's some of the songs that seem quite fresh. So yeah, it's going to be good, I think.
Are you going to be like reimagining any of these songs or playing them fairly true to the original?
Yeah, I think we'll go true to the, I think it's particularly the sort of way that the tour is framed. It's, you know, to revisit the album we might look at that sort of stuff. I feel like that will come after we actually learn the songs first, because that's probably a good thing to start with. But yeah, the songs general, I think, yeah, we're going to have a bass player, Pete, who's played with us recently. He plays with us a fair bit now, which will help. Mm-hmm. And other than that, we're actually, interestingly enough, like Heather's, she's had such different iterations of her keyboard setup, but she's actually going to revisit the setup that she had back then. It really informs the way you express the music, because if you have instruments that were from that time, it brings you back to that sound. Yeah. So, as our band grew, we sort of had more money to, you know, buy synths or instruments, but Prisoner was when we had like the bare minimum and we're like, do what we can. And so we're going to try and recreate that sort of desperation. Yeah. Which was actually like a really good creative force, so that's
love it.
Yeah.
Obviously the last 2 years have been a crazy time for, you know, we were talking off air about how you sort of stepped away from the music industry over the last couple of years, but a lot of people obviously have been trying to make a living over the last 2 years and struggling, and you know, we might have lost some musicians who may have gone big and other ones have sort of biding their time until the end. Obviously it affected the release of Goddess 911 as well. Do you think as you as a musician or you as an artist that it's sort of emboldened you or strengthened you to sort of keep going, you know, to keep working at it? Because it sounds like you're working on the music a lot still. But was there a time where you went, it's getting a bit too hard, or is music always going to be there for you? Like, you're never going to step away?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a big thing with musicians in general. It's like I feel like you have to commit to it full time if you want to make a thing of it, which is that big decision to make. And I feel like the Jezebels, we were at uni when we started and we had the freedom to make that choice and there was no pandemic, so we could launch into it and really give it our all. And I feel like that's the biggest problem these days, is with the sort of lack of revenue from, you know, streaming. It's okay, but it's a lot more challenging.
Yeah.
It's like you have to really commit, and if things are uncertain, it's really stressful. And I feel like the mental toll of that is just really, really big. Mm. And I've been hearing about that, and I just like, if you see a musician who's committing to the industry and wants to do shows and commit to it, I feel like there's a certain bravery and like sort of something that could be really inspiring. And I think the idea of supporting artists, especially now, is really important, because with Goddess 911, like, you know, I still work and can do it as well. But it's that sort of, you know, full on commitment to things. Like Heather for the piano music, she's like just committed to it, and it's so much work to do that. And you're just like, yeah, it's really
because when you commit so much time to something, and knowing that everything you're working on is, you know, going to be supporting you as in your life.
Yeah,
you can't. You feel like you have to just work really super hard to make sure that you put the best effort into it, right? Like I can get it, but I can see the stresses there.
Yeah, so it's just like I admire the commitment.
Me too.
In this time, yeah.
Just to mention the dates of that Prisoner tour as well, just because they are up and running. I think they starts in June, 3rd of June in Adelaide, and Perth, Byron, Brisbane, Canberra, playing the Enmore in Sydney, Melbourne. Big tour, big venues too. It's gonna be exciting. Yeah.
Should be good, hopefully.
But now these tickets for the Phoenix Central Park show, I think, are exhausted. But hopefully, there'll be some more shows coming up for Goddess 911 where we can see you. Maybe not in this sort of intimate setting, but maybe a different lineup or a different sort of way.
Yeah, we're sort of envisaging the. So I guess Heather Al and I will always be there, and we want to really involve people as much as we can, like musicians, and create a sort of
that's cool,
a nice sort of, not rotating, like if anyone, you know, we're playing with wants to keep playing with us, hopefully they'll be welcome, but we might like add a drummer or add like a harpist or sort of just create a it actually, I was thinking about it, it'd be cool to like if you're into a band and you just never knew what they were gonna, I think some bands do this, but you just don't never know what lineup they're gonna do and
have like a rotating roster of
artists.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, they're doing this lineup today. I mean, people might be frustrated, but like, I don't know. It's like, oh, the
Al
banjo
did those,
and the...
those Kelly Leon shows without you, right? Like,
yeah, exactly. So that's it, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was playing through the UK and...
And that was he bringing in people from over there? Like,
no, he was just doing it by himself. So it was like, it was more of a... Because it was tailored to Kelly's show as well, she's, you know, awesome producer. So it fitted that context. So we're sort of creating this... modular
setup. And it's becoming a thing, like even Genesis Owusu has these two forms of the show, right? He's got his full band show, then he's got his, you know, goons, and he's got his DJ set, MC set, and a lot of bands sort of have that now, different formulations of bands, and I think that's a cool thing, you know, it keeps it interesting
and it makes sense because I think a lot of shows these days are sort of like the traditional venue has been a bit deconstructed, so you have like a rock and roll show where you'd play the Annandale back in the day, but now there's like you could be doing a show on a rooftop, which is a drum kit just doesn't work. So it's like, you know, whatever works. Yeah.
So it's been so great to have you on here, and we'll wrap it up with the opening track from the EP and the one that introduced you to the world last year. Sorry, the title track from the EP, Goddess. And despite the fact that once upon a time, many societies were seen as having gender equity and had goddesses that were worshipped, we've really moved away from that. But this song encourages these practices to return. But what can we do as a society to find some peace and further understanding of each other? Do you think goddesses are the answer, Sam?
That's a big question.
just casually.
Yeah, I guess it's probably the main reason we sort of took this critical direction with what we're looking at is that question exactly. So, and again, we're like, I guess we're not saying we know the answer, but it's more just like it's a process of searching. So, being open to maybe a solution is the idea.
I like it. Being open to the solution and looking for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it.
Thanks so much for joining us on
the
Touch
Shop.
It's been great.
Thanks.